He had a restrainer harness on the pallet. That should keep Balveda secure. The machine could stand guard, and he would use the remote sensor on his suit to watch for movement in the immediate area where they slept. They ought to be safe enough. They finished their meal. Nobody disagreed with the idea of turning in. Balveda was trussed in the restrainer harness and barricaded in one of the empty storerooms off the platform. Unaha Klosp was told to sit itself up on one of the tall gantries and stay still unless it heard or saw anything untoward. Hawser set his remote sensor near where he would sleep, on one of the lower girders of a hoist mechanism. He had wanted a word with Yalsin, but by the time he had finished making all these arrangements, several of the others, including Yalsin, had fallen asleep already, lying back against the wall or laid out on the ground, their visors blanked or their heads turned away from the weak lights of the others' suits. Hawser watched Wubslin wander around the station for a bit. Then the engineer too lay down, and everything was still. Hawser switched the remote sensor on, primed to alarm if it sensed anything above a certain low level of movement. He slept fitfully. His dreams woke him. Ghosts chased him in echoing docks and silent, deserted ships, and when he turned to face them, their eyes were always waiting like targets, like mouths, and the mouths swallowed him, so that he fell into the eye's black mouth, past ice rimming it, dead ice rimming the cold, swallowing eye. And then he wasn't falling, but running, running with a leaden, pitch-like slowness through the bone cavities in his own skull, which was slowly disintegrating. A cold planet riddled with tunnels, crashing and crumpling against a never-ending wall of ice until the wreckage caught him and he fell, burning into the cold eye tunnel again. And as he fell, a noise came from the throat of the cold ice eye and from his own mouth and chilled him more than ice, and the noise said, "Eee!" State of Play 3. Fal Angistra was where she liked being most, on top of a mountain. She had just made her first real climb since she'd broken her leg. It was a relatively unforbidding peak, and she had taken the easiest route. But now, here at the summit, drinking in the view, she was dismayed at how unfit she'd become. The healed leg hurt a little, deep inside, of course, but so did the muscles in both legs, as though she'd just climbed a mountain twice the height and with a full pack. Just out of condition, she guessed. She sat on the summit of the ridge, looking out over smaller white summits to the sharp forested creases of the higher foothills and the rolling downs beyond, where grassland and trees combined. In the distance was the plain, rivers sparkling in the sunlight, and, marking its far side, the hills where the lodge was, her home. Birds wheeled far away in the high valleys beneath her, and sometimes light glinted from the plain as some reflective surface moved. A part of her listened to the distant bone ache, assessing it, then switched the nagging sensation off. She wanted no distractions. She hadn't climbed all this way just to enjoy the view. She'd come up here for a purpose. It meant something to climb, to haul this sack of bones and flesh all this way, and then look, then think, then be. She could have taken a flyer here any time when she'd been recovering, but she hadn't, even though Jace had suggested it. That was too easy. Being here wouldn't have meant anything. She concentrated, her eyelids drooping, going through the quiet internal chant, the unmagical spell that called up the spirits buried in her genifixed glands. The trance came on with an initial rush of dizzying force that made her put her hands out to each side, steadying herself when she didn't need steadying. The sounds in her ears, of her own blood coursing, of her breath's slow tide, loudened, took on strange harmonies. The light beyond her eyelids pulsed in time to the bloodbeat. She felt herself frown, imagining her brow creasing like the folding hills, and one part of her, still distant, watching, thought, "Still not very good at this." She opened her eyes, and the world had changed. The far hills were forever rolling brown and green waves with a crest of breaking white foam. The plain fumed with light. The pattern of pastureland and copses in the foothills looked like camouflage, moving but not moving, like a tall building seen against quick clouds. The forested ridges were buckled divisions in some huge, busy tree brain, and the snow and ice-covered peaks about her had become vibrating sources of a light that was sound and smell as well. She experienced a dizzying sense of concentricity, as though she was the nucleus of the landscape. Here, in an inside-out world, an inverted hollowness. Part of it. Born here. All she was, each bone and organ, cell and chemical and molecule and atom and electron, proton and nucleus, every elementary particle, each wavefront of energy from here, not just the orbital, dizzy again, touching snow with gloved hands, but the culture, the galaxy, the universe.